Welcome to your Monday Night Raw review. We're going to get things going in just a minute with my thoughts on Alexa Bliss and The Fiend dominating Raw and dominating single-handedly Retribution. We're also going to cover Lana's surprising performance against Asuka on Raw, the Drew McIntyre-Randy Orton build throughout the show, and Keith Lee versus Braun Strowman. That and so much more. Let's get it all started right now.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? 'Cause Stone Cold said so.
Hey everybody, welcome to your Monday Night Raw review right here on the WWE Podcast. Ton to get to with the show. You know, it was a solid go-home show to Hell in a Cell that comes to you this Sunday. And we'll be doing, of course, a preview and prediction show Saturday night, and then a review coming with the Botch Guy on the back end of that. But tomorrow's Wrestling Nostalgia, and of course, your NXT podcast with Zach Smith. So there's a lot to get to, and we're going to get to it in just short order here. But if you're new to the show, thank you. And you can also, if you don't like ads and plugs, you can get them all removed. Head on over to patreon.com/WWE podcast. The entire library of this show is available to you for $1 a month. Yeah, $1 gets you hundreds of episodes completely ad-free. So those that are not fans of commercials, and I totally understand, I get it, I'm one of them, well, you can have a very easy time there over at patreon.com/WWE podcast. And honestly, $1 for hundreds of episodes, it's like a penny per every episode. It's crazy in terms of the value. So I encourage you to head on over there. But we're going to get to your Monday Night Raw review in a moment. But there's first voicemails. So you guys are crazy with your voicemails. I try to have a limit of like 4, maybe 5 per show. And again, I appreciate them. You guys are awesome. Thank you. So if you sent me your voicemail and maybe I didn't play it yet, it's because I want to make sure that this isn't a completely voicemail show, right? So this is Monday Night Raw Review, so we'll do that. But you guys have a voice. I want to know what you guys think, and that's the purpose of the voicemail box being set up. How do you become a part of that? Easy. Call us, 518-952-0247, or email the show at realwwepodcast@gmail.com. And I'm getting voicemails from both methods. So let's get to that first voicemail so we can get our Monday Night Raw review rolling.
Hey Matt, this is Jeff again from the Philippines. So I just want to rant about some things. First, about the season premiere episode of both SmackDown and Raw. So on SmackDown, we got a bunch of Raw wrestlers in that show. And on Raw last night, we got Otis teaming up with Tucker. And so we just finished the 2020 draft on last week's episode of Raw. And we now got wrestlers from the other brand going to the another. So what's the purpose of trying to put them on SmackDown if they can just go to Raw immediately? I think you've heard about this news about Goldberg maybe returning to face Roman Reigns for the Universal Championship. And for me, I don't want to see Goldberg come back for a wrestling match. I still hate what happened when he just beat Kevin Owens for the Universal Championship back in 2017. And he also beat The Fiend for that championship. Both wrestlers jobbed to him. And maybe if they want to make Goldberg come back for one more wrestling match, maybe I want to see Roman Reigns beat him. That's all, Matt. Thank you. And have a great day.
Jeff, what's going on, man? Thanks for calling. And some great thoughts here. You're going to get me on a rant, which is not hard to do. But your analysis about Raw and SmackDown with their respective season premieres being anything but that, right? Like, if this is your season premiere, I agree with you. Then why is somebody that is no longer on that brand or should not be on that brand at all on the brand? I don't care if they're under a mask. I don't care if you're doing some hocus pocus trickery. Why are they there? There's no reason for this. There's no reason. They've undermined their draft on night one. They can't even go a single episode. They can't even go one episode without violating their own rules. It's disgusting. It's maddening. At least we didn't get Stephanie and Triple H out there like, you know, mom and daddy are out to scold the children and everyone bows down to the greatness that is the McMahons. I mean, at least we didn't get that, where every wrestler on stage is emasculated. So there's that. But they couldn't even go a single show. It's unbelievable. I know Otis was dressed up as El Gran Gordo or something to team with Tucker. I understand that. It's cute. All right. And if you haven't seen this in wrestling, you probably haven't been watching wrestling very long, because it's done, you know, every couple of years, something like this is done. I remember most famously, in my mind anyway, they did it at, I believe it was 2002, maybe 2001, 2002, when Hulk Hogan was fired by Vince McMahon. So Mr. America came in and he had the mask on. And we all knew it was Hulk Hogan, but he was just wearing a mask. So in essence, he's a different identity. So he's allowed in the building. And this is the same damn thing they've done with Otis. I mean, this is nothing new with wrestling logic. Right now, I'm telling you, if Otis was in front of a live crowd, the people would boo him. They would have turned on him. And Vince would have been like, I don't get this. This is bombastic. Why don't the people like him anymore? They loved him. It's very simple, Vince. It's because you put your spin on him when he was organically getting over on his own, doing his own thing in the Heavy Machinery tag team, which never even got off the damn ground in WWE. It never, in terms of the main roster, but I really mean on the bigger brands of Raw and SmackDown. There's no doubt they're the bigger brands, even though NXT holds its own. Raw and SmackDown are still the bigger brands in terms of viewership, because that's the ultimate determination of which brand is more successful. How many people are watching? End of story. So I'm not emasculating NXT, but the Heavy Machinery never have gotten a fair shake ever since they've been on the roster. They came up to SmackDown, had a couple of, you know, big victories, never got a tag team title run, and now they are split. So It's a damn shame that these two never got a real run, and now we're having even worse comedy with Otis. I mean, if you thought Otis was dead, if you thought that he, you know, Vince McMahon had buried him in terms of how the fans view him, not what Vince McMahon is trying to do with him. Vince McMahon is trying to push him as a comedy character that people think that he thinks people are going to love and that they'll organically get behind. But the problem is, people have already organically got behind Otis before Vince got his hands on him. People did, and then Vince caught onto it and goes, I see what you like. Let's give you more of it. And unfortunately, when Vince does that, he undermines his own goal. It's unbelievable what they've done with Otis. And yeah, but the bigger problem beyond Otis's just demise, and to me would get booed and booed and booed out of a building if he were in front of a live audience. And this is one of those instances that I really wish they were, so that Vince didn't get to sit in his imagination land and pretend that everything he does is perfect and everything he does is working like magically, and that he can pump in his own crowd noise and basically live in his own fantasy land of not worrying about what the crowd reacts to, because they don't have to. But there's big consequences that come with that when we're finally back in front of fans. And my God, does WWE need fans to help guide them, not just social media, but real live people to help guide them as to not everything. Everything's not a disaster, but Otis particularly. But yeah, the big problem here is the brand split. They can't even adhere to it for one night. They violated it on the very first night. It's a season premiere. So if it's a season premiere and it's a fresh start, what are the people that aren't supposed to be there doing there? It's ridiculous. Ugh. There goes my rant. Goldberg coming back. Man, yeah, I heard about that too. And it seems as if Vince is, for whatever reason, still enamored with Goldberg. But this is also one of the people coming back that if it was in front of a live audience, he would probably get booed as well. Not as wildly as probably Otis would or some others, but Goldberg coming back, there's a lot of stink on Goldberg, right? Goldberg did drop the belt to Braun Strowman at WrestleMania, we know this. But, as you alluded to, the Kevin Owens incident, right? The more famously Fiend incident that really, really damaged not just the Fiend, but also Goldberg's babyface character and the need for people to see Goldberg. I think people went in and like, okay, we see what you're doing. I understand bringing in a big star will help give the rub to the new guys there. And we understand that and we agree with that. But you don't have Goldberg beat a guy that's going to be here 10 years longer than Goldberg ever will be. Maybe 15 years. If Bray Wyatt has a long career in front of him, what are you doing damaging a long-term character for a short-term gain of having Goldberg, a guy that's here once, twice a year, for that pop? I mean, it's not needed, and it was a terrible call. Terrible call. Awful. Awful. And then the whole jackhammer incident, I think, was somewhat purposeful by Bray Wyatt. I mean, it was just... There's so much that you could say about Goldberg and the Fiend that it, you know, I tried to put that out of my mind and now you brought it up. Boy, you've got me on fire, Jeff. Thanks. Appreciate it. Yeah, if Goldberg's coming back, I mean, I don't think anybody wants to see him back other than Vince. And I think he thinks that people want to see Goldberg versus Reigns because they feel like they got screwed out of it at WrestleMania. So Vince is still going to deliver. Honestly, I wasn't even thinking about that match. I wasn't thinking, oh man, we never got to see Spear versus Spear. No, I'm fine with it. I don't need to see a 2-minute special by Goldberg of just trying to go for his spear for, you know, 3 minutes. I don't need that. I don't need that. I don't need the Goldberg star power. It doesn't to me do anything for anyone. And I don't feel like I missed out at WrestleMania. I don't feel like I was screwed out of a match. I'm just not a Goldberg fan. I think he's the right guy at the right time. And he's got a great look, got a great body. Not a good promo. Intense as hell. Great guy, from what I understand. Like, an actual really good dude. But that's irrelevant because it's not really a matter of if you're a good guy or not in real life. It's a matter of the persona that you put on, is it big enough to bring back to help other guys be elevated? I mean, I just don't see the need to have this done. But, okay, moving on to the next voicemail.
Hi, I'm Kyle from Booker, Maryland. I wanted to talk about the Sasha Bailey Hell in a Cell match. I think that should be the main event. It's the big story for the show. And when Sasha wins the championship, which I hope she does, hopefully she'll have a long title reign like everybody else does, and start a feud with Bianca Belair. Maybe that should be a good feud, but what do you think about that? Sasha getting long title reign finally in her life in WWE. It's my call. Bye.
Hey, Kyle from Baltimore, Maryland. Nice area, by the way. Actually, more Ocean City area is where I used to go for vacation, but nonetheless, thank you for calling in and welcome to the show. And, well, here is what I'm thinking with Sasha and Bayley. I think, as it stands right now, that Sasha does not get the championship at Hell in a Cell. I think they want to string this out a little more. And, you know, the more I think about this whole program, I really, number one, I think that Sasha will eventually capture it. There's no question. And I agree with you that I want her to have an actual run with it, not just that's just Sasha's Achilles heel. She can never successfully defend the championship. That's what she's known for. No, No. I do want her to have a significant run. But I also like the chase for a babyface. It's always fun when the babyface chases the heel and then they finally climb the mountain and they get to it. Now, I have a lot of problems with this rivalry that I never thought I did until I listened to other shows, other wrestling podcasts. Believe it or not, I do. And I'm not trying to hijack other people's ideas. But when it sparks an interest in my own, like, kind of subconscious of what is wrong with this program. Because I have been praising the whole build to it. It's been very well done. We've all been waiting for the turn of Sasha versus Bayley. And I have no problem with them facing one another. Now, on the surface, superficially, we're going to get to the deeper problems in a minute. But superficially, why is their second match at Hell in a Cell? It's not their first match, by the way. I know many people are, oh, it's their first match at Hell in a Cell. I've heard other shows talk about that. It's not. They had a match on SmackDown. Of which I don't know why the hell they would put that match, the match that everyone's been building to, even if it's just a stepping stone and not a destination, why the F would you put it on SmackDown instead of trying to do it? And they did it the Friday before the draft. Why the hell would you do it on SmackDown instead of at least doing it at pay-per-view? Nonetheless, that's, you know, a small thing compared to what I'm going to get to here. The Hell in a Cell itself should be match 3 or 4 for these ladies, these women. It should not be match 1 or 2. So the whole deal of, well, if it's first or second match, it's still at the beginning of the program. Just terrible timing on the part of the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view dropping, meaning their schedule, WWE's schedule of pay-per-views just happened to be Hell in a Cell month, and oh, guess what? Any programs that are going on get inside the cell. Stupid. You guys know how I feel about that. Which now you're also seeing the drawbacks of it because it doesn't make sense. These two are at inside the cell on match 2. Doesn't make sense. Hell in a Cell is a blow off. So that's superficial stuff. And it's bad in and of itself in its own right. But here's the bigger problem I have with the program that I absorb this from other podcasts that you guys all probably listen to, and that's cool. But I'm going to piggyback on it and add to it. Sasha didn't really turn babyface. She got turned on, and now we're supposed to feel sympathetic because she didn't turn on Bayley before Bayley could turn on her. Think about that. Sasha didn't turn babyface and say, you know, like, I'm trying to do the right thing, and, you know, you really... No. No. The whole premise is that Bayley turned on her before Sasha could turn on her. So it's kind of like this. Remember when Seth Rollins was with the Authority? And then the Authority dumped Seth Rollins. And then Seth Rollins became babyface apparently by default because he tried to get back with the Authority. But since the Authority didn't want him any longer, now he's a babyface? How does that work? It's the same thing here. Bayley dumped Sasha. And now we're supposed to feel bad for Sasha because Bayley dumped her. But Sasha's still the same person. Nothing has changed in Sasha, at least nothing that we have seen or heard from her, other than she likes to wear, like, latex jumpsuits. You know, the outfit she wore on SmackDown. It was just obscene. I mean, we didn't get anything, and I haven't got that big fire promo yet. I don't feel much for this, and it's super disappointing because of how much of the build this program had. It had a really long, great build that these two went on a great run. We knew the turn was coming. They teased it for months. It finally happens. Bayley tries to break Sasha's neck. Great. And then, okay, follow up. What do we do? How do we get to their matches? And it hasn't felt very good. And the babyface turn, again, it's not a babyface turn. It's essentially still heel versus heel when you think about it. So, yeah, I'm not really high on the execution of the storyline here. The execution has been lackluster at best. A program that we were all looking forward to, and it just kind of feels flat. And I think they can repair it because it's still somewhat early in this rivalry. I think they have a few pay-per-views to go, probably through the end of the year, probably ending at TLC, going through Survivor Series, maybe ending at TLC, and having Sasha captured at Survivor Series, and then she defends it successfully against Bayley at TLC. Or the alternative is, and many of you have come to me with this solution, is Sasha doesn't capture it. She doesn't capture it until she wins the Royal Rumble and she has to face Bayley at WrestleMania. But here's the problem with that. They're already having matches now. Does WWE really want to risk the fans getting burned out of Sasha versus Bayley through the end of 2020? Sasha wins and then you know it's automatically the main event for WrestleMania 37 next year? I don't think the fans want to go through really 6 more months of this rivalry, because that's how long it would go. So to me, this ends before the end of the year. Before the ball drops, this program will be over. That's my take on it. That's my take. I mean, these two may be involved in like a multi-woman match at WrestleMania, but I doubt it's going to be one-on-one. So, alrighty, let's get to the next voicemail.
Hey, Matt. It's Josh from Fort Worth again. I just got 2 quick questions after watching Raw last night. One, what are your thoughts on Mustafa Ali and his explanation of being the leader of Retribution and his saying that he was the hacker on SmackDown? I thought it was kind of a cheap way to get rid of the hacker on SmackDown. Not that it's been on there for a couple months anyway, but nonetheless. And then 2, what are your thoughts on what happened at the beginning with Retribution, the Fiend, and the Hurt Business? I'm sure you'll cover that on your Raw review. And then there's one more question. I'm just having a brain fart at the second. I'll just go with those 2. You have a good one, Matt, and can't wait to hear your show. Bye.
Hey, Josh. Hope you're doing well. Thanks for calling in. And so here's what I think about Ali. And yeah, I'm kind of getting into my Raw review, but that's what the show is. I mean, I like to typically do like a voicemail part and then dive into whatever topic I'm going to talk about. But since you're bringing it up, let's jump into it, because here's what I liked about Ali. I actually, as much as I've been crapping all over Retribution, and I have been, and for good reason, and I do not take any of it back, and I stand 300% by whatever I said and what I have been saying about the Retribution storyline that makes like seriously zero sense, especially given Retribution's whole mission is to take down WWE. That is their mission statement. They are supposed to be the ones who destroy WWE and make them pay. And then WWE says, okay, well, are you going to still raise hell? Are you still going to throw bricks through our windows and throw Molotov cocktails and break into the arena when you're not supposed to be there and attack our staff and attack fans? Well, here's a contract. That's essentially what they said. That's what they said. So yeah, I stand by it and I will continue to stand by it, because it insults my intelligence, insults your intelligence, everyone listening, insults their intelligence, because they don't bother to explain how the hell it makes sense that somebody who's destroying your business, and that's their mission to destroy their business, and they have said that is their mission, that they go, oh, sorry, you know what, come on in, you can be an employee of the company. That's like, I made this analogy a few weeks ago. It's like me walking into Apple, right? They got the all brand new iPhone 12s. I'm going in. I'm smashing their stuff. I'm throwing a brick through all that nice glass they got in the front of their store. I'm tossing tables, right? I throw a Molotov cocktail in and I leave. No security, because security is inept, right? And I just walk out and I do this week after week. No one comes, no police, no security of any kind of substance. And then eventually they go, huh, I'm sorry, sir. And they're like shaking, their hands are shaking. And they go, sign here. You can join Apple. Be one of our team members. That's essentially what they did. It's ridiculous. Think about that. That is exactly what they did. Now, beyond that stupidity of just a complete massive hole in the story, not even like a little one that I, you know, can kind of gripe on and be like, oh my God, they couldn't just explain this. No. This is like missing 8 chapters in a story. This is going from chapter 1 to 9. This is ridiculous. It's absolutely asinine. And yeah, I'm pissed off about it, because it makes me angry as a fan that WWE thinks they can get away with this. And nobody's saying boo about it. Except us. I mean, probably other shows and wrestling fanatics like yourself, right? But outside of that, their mission is that, right? To destroy WWE, and WWE stupidly hands them a contract. Nobody says boo about it or explains how they get it. But yet that's not what Retribution's doing. They're just being implanted into tag team matches. They're not raising hell anymore, so they're just actually becoming a part of the problem that they're trying to destroy. They're trying to destroy the company. Well, they're doing a very poor job of that. This idea is flawed from the beginning. You see this? And I don't mean that facetiously or trying to be, you know, smug about it. I'm saying to creative. This is who I'm like directing my anger at. This idea is flawed from the beginning because if you have a group that you've created, and I'll get to Mustafa Ali in a minute, which is actually some good stuff to talk about. If you have an idea from the beginning that's like, you know, guys, we should create a group that just wants to destroy WWE. We're going to play off of the real world groups that are out there claiming that they have their truce and they're destroying stuff and trying to get their message out. Let's play on that. No one thought to say, hey, you know, eventually we're going to have to employ these people that are destroying all our stuff. How are we going to explain that? How are we going to explain that we're going to give people money to not only come in and raise hell, but to do whatever they want and without any penalty? Now they can do it without security, you know, faking that they shouldn't be there. This is probably one of the most ridiculous storylines I've ever seen. It's flawed at the foundation. That's the thing. It's not like this could have been executed well, because how could you have? I don't even know how they could have even done this correctly because of the fact of their mission statement. They're trying to destroy the company. They're trying to seek revenge on the company. In what world? I don't even know a scenario in wrestling fantasy land that I could come up with that would make sense for WWE to even have their hand forced to sign the contracts for these individuals. And where the hell are the other individuals? Apparently there was like 30 of them at one point. Then there's 10. Now there's 5. Now there's like, I don't know. And I can't even take the names of these people seriously. Outside of Mustafa Ali. I can't take T-Bar, Mace, Flapjack. Again. These like, did they just watch a bad 80s action adventure movie and look, like just go, hey, what are the names of the bad guys? It's just, I mean, seriously, I mean, like, listen to the name. I can't even say those names. They're not laughing. They're terrible. Now, the costumes, the outfits, they're okay. I don't think they're super ridiculous. I mean, they're not, you know, they don't knock my socks off, but I can't even take the name seriously. T-Bar, Mace, Flapjack. God, I mean, really. I'm serious. It sounds like a bad 80s movie flick, doesn't it? So Mustafa Ali, the good part. Every time I talk about Retribution, I just go off. I just can't believe they did WWE. And I'm more, you know what, I'm not even angry at the individuals who are playing this whole part here. I'm angry at creative and Vince for allowing this and not thinking this through. There was no thinking through on this. They just looked on the surface and they just executed something without actually looking at the details of the implementation and the long-term impact and like where they want to go. They took 8 weeks to actually have somebody say something from the group. Okay. All right, I'm going to get heated again. So, good thing. Mustafa Ali. I liked his explanation, despite all the flaws. I like what I'm seeing from Mustafa Ali. I like his cadence. He easily delivered the best promo of his career. Very well spoken. I think he's showing what he can do. So as terrible as the logic is for all of this, Mustafa Ali is the shining light here. Because what he talked about was that he had time off and that how he can cause chaos with a laptop, a cell phone, right? And that he revealed he was the hacker. It's one of those things that WWE had no idea Retribution was coming. But they kind of form-fitted it to say, well, the hacker was after the truth. And, yeah, we could kind of mesh these storylines to wrap it up. Because we had no idea who the hacker was going to be anyway. So it kind of makes sense. And we're pretty sure people would buy it. No. It's another example. Three examples. Right off the bat, three examples of creative. Just putting ideas out there with no direction. No end game. The hacker. Clearly, no idea. You think WWE had the foresight to think about this like 6 months ago when the hacker was introduced? And they said, oh, well, we're going to bring in this group in 5 months. And hey, we're going to have Mustafa Ali be revealed as the leader. And he's going to come out and say he was the hacker. Yeah, I'm sure. I'm A-okay about believing that WWE actually had the foresight to think that far in advance. It's ridiculous. Now, is it at least plausible? Yeah, it's plausible. And at least they wrapped up the storyline, which tells me the hacker's not coming back, which actually makes me sad because I enjoyed the hacker. I really did. I thought it was nice. I thought it was a nice, cute little thing they were doing that I was actually interested in when they did the truth segments and, you know, the truth will be known and all that kind of thing. So, yeah, I actually enjoyed the hacker, and they just decided, well, we haven't wrapped this up. This is our chance to do it, guys. And he was revealed as the hacker. Fine. Whatever. I'm just going to let it go. I have no problem because the hacker was dead to me anyway because they had no idea where they were going with that. They had no idea where they were going with Retribution, and they had no idea where they were going with Raw Underground. They just come up with seeds of ideas that sound like they could be good, and then they put them out there and go, okay, what's next? Like, oh, where do we go with this? And they're, you know, people are just shrugging their shoulders going, I don't know. That's what it looks like. I really believe that. I really believe that they put these ideas out there with Underground, Retribution, and the hacker, and just they have no end game. That's a terrible way to tell the story. And they're all about storytelling. Well, what is the first thing an author of a book tell you? You have to know the ending to write the beginning, right? Well, clearly, WWE knows the beginning without knowing the ending. And then it shows by dropping a storyline, force-feeding things in that don't make sense when Mustafa Ali is the hacker, being revealed as the hacker. All these things that just don't make sense. Raw Underground. Again, where's that going? I don't know. Let's just introduce it. Okay, I think I've said my piece and just absolutely ridiculous. But Mustafa Ali, I'm on board because he's there. And he has shown me really good stuff. I like his cadence. I like how The Fiend, even this week, when he attacked Retribution, because the Retribution tried to attack him first. Okay, so there's that. But when you look at that match, first of all, the tag match between the Hurt Business and Retribution, which why Hurt Business is the only team that's willing to stand up to Retribution is ridiculous. If you truly have guys that are at your, you know, who are supposedly there to wreck your livelihood by trying to shut down and wreck the company that you have worked so hard to get into and have a multi-million dollar contract with, wouldn't you think other guys would step up and say, hey, no, we're all banding together. These a-holes are out of here, right? And it's apparently the Hurt Business, who at the beginning told Adam Pearce that for money, they will help defend Raw. And they're the only ones. And they are heels who are coming after Retribution. And they're the only ones. That's it. No one else cares to bother to face Retribution. Yeah, they've dabbled in The Fiend now, but when you look at the tag team match at the open Raw, the entire ring was heels. The entire ring. There were no babyfaces in that ring. Outside of you, the argument that you could say, well, Bray Wyatt maybe turned babyface, and maybe. Maybe. You could argue that he's been kind of an in-between guy anyway the whole time he's been The Fiend. I don't ever think he's been a true heel. I don't. They just haven't booked him that way. He's too damn cool. He's the cool heel. That's not a heel, right? That's kind of the gray area, but he's so good. You're not gonna ever boo him. It's like the ooh and ah spectacle. But you're not going to boo The Fiend, typically. Or ever. I don't even know if The Fiend's ever really been booed outside of the terrible Hell in a Cell debacle that happened last year with Seth Rollins. But when you look at the entire ring there, the entire Hurt Business, all heels. Retribution, all heels. The Fiend, heel, at least how he's booked. So that was just interesting that they all had. I mean, it's fine with me. Doesn't always have to be babyface versus babyface, and that's fine. Or babyface versus heel. You know, you can have heel versus heel, but it's very interesting that they had that. And look, I don't know why they would have actually gone through here with The Fiend and Retribution. You would think that WWE would go, oh, this is going to be great when it happens. And they just can't help themselves and they do it on week one. Why? That's something you build to. That could have been a really fun moment. It's terrible. Again, terrible logic aside, if Retribution continued to dominate and maybe go back to their destroying everything and leaving type of motto, this could have been a hell of a moment with The Fiend being surrounded. Instead, they just blew it in week one. Why? Right? That could have been a really cool moment. And yeah, it still was kind of interesting. It was interesting, but I don't want to say interesting. It should have been awesome. Awesome should be the adjective I'm using. Instead, it was just kind of like interesting. I can't think of anything else. And the Fiend does his hocus pocus with Alexa Bliss, disappears. And Alexa Bliss is killing it, by the way. Alexa Bliss has got her career completely revived. She is selling it 100%. I love that connection there with The Fiend and Alexa Bliss. I hope this doesn't go anywhere. Again, I don't know the end game, but I'm fine with not knowing or really thinking about it and just having Alexa Bliss continue to be brainwashed and possessed by The Fiend. Fine. It's working. I love Alexa Bliss as a character. I think she's got way more to offer than just the terrible talk show that she got lost in with Nikki Cross being kind of like the not funny mean girls that are running a talk show. And Nikki Cross is just really good in the ring. Bombastic, crazy personality, but I do not like her as a babyface. She's obnoxious to me, and I never liked her pairing with Alexa Bliss. But that's off the point. Alexa Bliss's career is now revived officially. She is back into complete relevancy in a main event style, right? She's back in that position. Yes, she's not competing herself, but boy, is she getting an awesome rub right now. I know that many people think she could compete for a women's championship. Absolutely. Absolutely she could for the Raw Women's Championship. And she very well may face Asuka sooner than later, where The Fiend interrupts on her behalf to scare Asuka and Alexa Bliss captures the Raw Women's Championship. That would be awesome. So, wow, I am like hauling it. And again, guys, I know we're still in the voicemail segment, but those of you that want me to get into Raw, I just did it for you. So, all right, let's get into the next voicemail here.
Yeah, hi, it's Tim from Arlington, Texas. I'm not justifying this, but on your last review, it was a SmackDown review, or maybe I think it was the weekend review, you were talking about Rude and Ziggler. Unearned opportunity, tag team championship. And I just wanted to say they kind of did explain how they earned it, I guess. As you said, maybe I missed something, whatever. Like I said, I'm not saying I agree with how they earned it, but this was their excuse. They had just beat the team of the Street Profits and Drew McIntyre when Randy Orton pinned Drew. So, because of that, they were saying, our team beat your team. We deserve a shot at the championship. So, like I said, I'm not saying I agree with the means to it, but at the same time, at least they gave us a reason. As long as they give me a reason, I'm a pretty simple person when I'm watching wrestling. I know I do rant a lot because that's just what I do, as yourself. But I rant because I love it. But I do try when I watch wrestling, I try to make the stories make sense even when they don't, because I want to enjoy the story. So I still try to make it make sense and just go along with it. But sometimes, especially here lately, some things are just so absurd it's hard to ignore. Like what? Anyways, yeah, I just wanted to throw that out there. I do agree with you. The championships, I am so tired of seeing them just randomly. Even if you give me a good reason, they don't need to be defended as often as they are. It makes them seem a lot less meaningless. The championship match should be something we're looking forward to seeing. Oh, 3 weeks from now, there's a championship match. And speaking of championships, and I know they'll never do this, but I would really, 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 especially with the smaller rosters we have today, I would really like to see one men's tag team championship. The two championship belts, one per thing, it's just not working for me right now because the tag team games are so low. It's like, who do you see? I mean, who's going to challenge you? You and the two other teams, or maybe they'll throw together another makeshift team so that there'll be somebody new to challenge. It's just, I would like to see that go away. But that's all I got for you. Thanks.
Hey, Tim. Thanks for calling in. As always, very good to hear from you. Good thoughts, and thank you for clearing up the tag team debacle. I believe I even said, if someone understands why they got a tag team championship opportunity, please let me know. And you did provide one. And, you know, I stand corrected. At the same time, I would say, well, number one, I think they are deserving. But at least tell me that if they win this match, that they will then get a championship opportunity. Just because you beat a tag team champion team that is in a non-title match doesn't automatically afford you a opportunity at the championship. Now, more often than not, it does. And I understand why. I'm not ranting on that. It's perfectly logical. But at least instead of saying to me, with the announcers, or as the narrative of the story, when the announcers tell me this, like, well, if they beat so-and-so team, that'll put them right in the running for a tag team championship opportunity, and that's all they do, right? That's fine if they tell me that. But the matchmakers, creative, somebody should say definitively, if you win this match, you'll be the number one contender. It doesn't always have to do that. But more often than not, it's just, well, you won the match last week, so now you get an opportunity. Well, I didn't know that before I had the match. And the fans didn't know that before the match actually happened. And it's not something that they're very direct or clean about telling you. It's just happenstance. It's just, you know, they happened to win last week against a top team, or even the tag team champions themselves in a non-title match. That automatically gives them the opportunity. Well, if the tag team champions knew that if they lose, they will have to defend their belts against that team, wouldn't they maybe have tried harder, again, in pro wrestling land, right? So I guess I'm just not a fan of when it's just arbitrary. It's kind of like very vague of when opportunities are given. And your explanation is absolutely valid. I just don't like how WWE isn't clear about it when they present these matches. You know, like, make it feel more important. Tell us that if they win, they're going to get an opportunity at the tag team championships. Don't tell me it may put them in the running or a big opportunity. Oh, this puts them right in the conversation for the Raw Tag Team Championships. No. Somebody needs to make the decision somewhere that it makes it, like, the narrative needs to change when these matches are happening. Or maybe they don't even foresee this, and they just go, well, they beat the tag team champions last week, let's just give them an opportunity. There's just no clear direction sometimes. But I understand, and thanks, Tim, for your clarification. And I also noticed your comment about that you want to enjoy wrestling, and I do too. That's why we're here. That's why you're listening to this podcast, and you're 43 minutes into a podcast that's all about wrestling. So if you're listening this far, then you are a true diehard wrestling fan. I would say the casual fans probably don't listen to podcasts. The ones that just kind of tune in every other week or once a month or check in, especially on WrestleMania, those people aren't listening to this. But I will say that if you have to try and you have to consciously try to fill in the holes, it takes you out of the moment by filling in the holes. When you are trying to piece together a story that WWE should have told you in the first place, guess what? That means they didn't do their job, and now you have to expend the brain energy to come up with an explanation of how things are happening. And I know that we're not stupid people. I mean, the unfortunate stereotype of wrestling fans is that we're not too intelligent. We're all just kind of like lazy, lazy, unintelligent people walking around this earth. I really don't think that's the case. I think there are all walks of life who like wrestling, just like there are all walks of life who like the NFL or MLB. It's just, unfortunately, wrestling fans get a bad rap for whatever reason. And I don't know if Vince is stuck in that mental pit of thinking that wrestling fans either don't care or maybe aren't as intelligent as he may think they are. They're more intelligent than he may think that they are. And he just doesn't bother with those kinds of details, thinking, oh, we don't need to spend energy on that. We need to focus on the main event. We don't need to, you know, I think it's a very telling, telltale sign. There's a lot of T's for you, that those types of things happen more often than not, where, as you said, Tim, we need to think about and fill in the holes that WWE either was too lazy, and didn't bother to put in the time to tell us so that we could have a coherent story and actually have an experience through the story that you're telling. When I have to fill in, it's like writing chapters in a book. We go from chapter one to three, and we're like, hey, wait a minute, where's chapter two? And WWE's like, ah, the fans will fill it in. They'll figure it out. They'll write chapter two. No, that's not how books work, right? You know, I'm not even talking about super little details. I'm talking about, like, sometimes, like I said with the Retribution thing, massive holes. So, nonetheless, Tim, thank you so much. You and I love wrestling. We all do if you're listening to this, and we do want it to be better. That's why we're here. This is not a complaining session on the show. I keep it PG for a reason, because WWE's product is PG. So I believe me, I can come on here and cuss and swear and do all that kind of thing, but I don't think it's tasteful, number one. Number two, it wouldn't align with WWE's product of being PG. If I was TV-14 or, you know, rated R, then I think that cuts off some of the audience that may be watching the show that are TV-PG. I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me. I should align with whatever programming WWE is doing. And I don't know, I'm getting off topic, but alrighty. Well, thanks to all of our voicemail contributors. And if you want to be a part of it and you're like, hey, I gotta say this or that, or I disagree with what you're saying. I love people that disagree. So don't get me wrong. If you have something bad to say or not necessarily trashing the show, if you hate the show, obviously I'm not going to put it on. That would just be silly of me. However, if you do want to talk to me about wrestling, that's something you really agree or really disagree, please call the show. It's 518-952-0247. Again, you can also email us at realwwepodcast@gmail.com if you were so choose. So, okay, let's get into all the other things that happened on Raw, because as I said, the voicemail segment here was like 40 minutes long, but that being said, I did cover some of Monday Night Raw. So those of you that are like, oh my God, you did 40 minutes of voicemail and then you got to Raw? Geez, why don't you just call the show voicemails, right? And well, I did incorporate Raw. So those of you that are nitpicky, don't worry. I understand. Okay. Let's talk about some other things going on Raw. And, you know, Drew McIntyre and Randy Orton. Let's kind of lighten the mood a bit and not rant. Let's take a breath. I'm going to take a breath. You join me in and out. Randy Orton and Drew McIntyre. Here we go. I have really enjoyed this program as a whole since its inception. I think that WWE has done a very nice job of building Randy Orton. Now, you guys know, I'm not a fan of Randy Orton losing at all. I think that that victory belonged to Edge upon his return. I've been very clear about that, and I still stand by that Randy Orton should not have lost, nor even taken a finisher. Now, that's going a little bit extreme, but even been able to, you know, just been able to escape and take a finisher. That's crazy, right? But that's how I would have built it. But nonetheless, we're here now with Drew and Orton, who I think have a really good chemistry. And I think that Orton has been utilized very well over the last couple weeks, getting a big victory over Drew, especially after losing again in the ambulance match at Clash of Champions Gold Rush. So Randy Orton's been doing a nice job of getting his heat back. And he cut a nice promo this week talking about all of his memories inside of the cell, sitting down and very kind of calmly, cool, collected, and how he had 7 cell matches before this. This will be his 8th with Drew McIntyre, talking about the night that he faced the Celtic Warrior Sheamus, right? And went through the list of people, John Cena, and he talked about how the cell never took from him, that he learned about himself. I think a better line would have been that the cell never took from me, I took from the cell. I mean, but hey, it's kind of hindsight nitpicking. But Orton talked about that he learned what he was capable of inside the cell, talks about what a legend is, and was just about to get to Drew McIntyre, and then he comes out, and Drew McIntyre looks like he can't get into the cell, and I was actually hoping it would end there. I was hoping Drew wouldn't be able to get into the cell so that we could build anticipation for seeing these two go at it inside the cell on Sunday, but Drew had the beloved bolt cutters that he hid behind the barricade in the arena and was able to get into the cell as Randy Orton was retreating. Now, I did not see what happened after Raw. I know that something must have happened. I actually like how Raw didn't go off the air in perfect timing with something that ended. And it was just like time to go off the air. You don't see this too often. And what do I mean by that? Like, when is the last time that WWE ended Monday Night Raw where you were left like, oh, wait, what happened? Oftentimes you're like, oh, okay, that happened. Let's talk about it. In this case, you were like, wait, don't go off the air. Don't go off the air. I want to see what happens. That very rarely happens. So I enjoyed that. I enjoyed wanting more because it's very rare in today's product that we are left wanting more. Very rare because we're so overloaded with a 3-hour Raw, which I still believe they should put down to 2, but they won't because of advertising revenue. And I understand that. They're a business. I get it. So a 3-hour Raw probably isn't going anywhere. But you have that. You have a 2-hour SmackDown. You have NXT. You have a pay-per-view every 3 to 4 weeks. On top of all the content you can consume on the network, all the originals, all that kind of stuff. So there's a ton of content, and oftentimes we're just saturated, oversaturated with it. So this was a nice touch. I thought this was a nice touch to end Raw where we were left wanting more. At least I was. So I would assume that Randy Orton probably was able to escape and that he didn't get claymored or anything. That's my guess. I mean, I probably should just head over to WWE.com. But I would assume that nothing major happened and that you're going to see the real payoff this Sunday at I almost said Extreme Rules, at Hell in a Cell. So, I think they've done a nice job. And it's perhaps time that Randy Orton captures the WWE Championship. This would be his third opportunity at the belt. And I think that it might be time, but I won't tip my hand completely until the preview and prediction show Saturday night. So that'll be dropping the night before the pay-per-view for those that are interested in hearing such things. But you know, I think also on Drew's end, he's done a really nice job of cutting a promo, feeling like a real champion. You know, he's like a man's man, isn't he? You know, he's not the sniveling, slimy Seth Rollins that we never really trusted or enjoyed as a babyface. It felt very forced. Drew is just so natural as a babyface. He's very likable, where Seth wasn't as a babyface. He feels like a champion, right? He doesn't feel like they're trying to make him. It feels like he's already a champion, and now he's officially being recognized as such with the WWE Championship. He is truly, a real champion. He's very authentic, and I can't say that very often about the champions that WWE crowns. So I really have enjoyed Drew's run. If it indeed comes to an end this Sunday, I have enjoyed it. I feel really bad for the guy that it's not in front of fans. I mean, this guy gets to the top, and he isn't able to get in front of real fans. I feel for him, man. I really do. As on a person level, like at a human level. Not on a pro wrestling character level, on a human level. If, you know, this is the end of his run for at least the foreseeable future, and he'll get it back if he loses it at Hell in a Cell, and hopefully it's in front of fans. So if he indeed loses it at Hell in a Cell Sunday, of which I think there's a significant chance, I'll leave it at that wording, but I wouldn't say it's 100%, but I would say it's a very strong chance that he drops it to Orton at Hell in a Cell, setting up for Edge's return. And then I think that when he does lose it, that he will have a significant amount of time away from it, several months, before he recaptures it again. And I think that WWE should plan it so that if there's hinting of people being able to be let back in sporting events, that they do it in front of a live audience. Because I think Drew McIntyre, the person, is deserving of enjoying that moment in front of real, live, like breathing human beings. Not teleprompters, not virtual screens, not NXT trainees or their families that are just basically drones and robots for WWE to react the way that ever, wherever they want them to react. It's not real organic passion. It's very, very contrived, and it's not real. Whereas the fans that come in to pay their money to be there will tell you how they feel and tell you what's working and what's not. And I think Drew would be... He would have a hero's welcome. I really think so. So, okay, moving down the line, something else good. Asuka versus Lana. Surprisingly, I enjoyed this. Now, the outcome, very predictable. But it was never about the outcome in this one. This one was about how could Lana fare against one of the best in the business in Asuka. I think that we got our answer. And the answer is much better than expected. Lana has clearly been working in the ring, in her spare time, She's gotten herself in really good shape. She is, like I said, doing extra work. She's, I don't know if she's in the performance center, the Capitol Wrestling Center, whatever they call it now. I'll just call it the Performance Center for now because it's just easier. So she's just putting in a lot of work, and you can see it. And she held her own against Asuka. And, you know, there are very few botches. She was smoother than expected. It was a somewhat short match, but Lana, I think, made a statement here of, I'm here to play, and I'm not just going to fade into the darkness. And you know what? I have been advocating that WWE just kind of allows her to fade into nothing. And I think it's because I was tired of the Bobby Lashley persona that she put on when she was in that whole storyline. I never enjoyed that at all, ever. When she was with Rusev originally, was when she was at her best. She was really good on the mic. Her Russian accent was very convincing. And now she is, she's clearly going on a singles career, on a singles run. And, you know, I hope it goes well for her. I just am tired and was tired of the Lana persona that they put on her for so long. And that's what I was tired of. I'm not wishing her to be fired. It's her well-being. It's her livelihood. I'm not advocating for that. I just think that when I was saying that she should just go away, it's the Lana personality that was just driving me into the ground. But she did really well in this match. And you know what? I could see her eventually capturing the Women's Championship. Here's the thing. She will. She signed recently a 5-year contract with WWE, reportedly. And this isn't just, you know, rumors. It seems to be pretty confirmed from several sources, several big name websites. You all know what they are. That she has signed a recent 5-year deal with WWE. That tells me that she's not going anywhere. She's going to bust her ass to continue to get better and eventually capture that Women's Championship. It's just a matter of time. So they want to make her a big star, and I think in due time it'll take some time. But she eventually, I think, will get there. She's got some ways to go, but definite improvement this week. Okay, the Elias concert. Oh, boy. Okay. I really am not a fan of the Elias character that is just won't let go of his musical persona. I know he's kind of Jeff Jarrett part two. He's like the 2020 Jeff Jarrett, the updated Jeff Jarrett, except he's got dark hair. I get all that. There's too much emphasis on his music. I know that's part of understanding who he is as a character. I get it, but it's too much. It's always about singing a song. He's always got a guitar. Does he always need to have one? I don't know. I think Elias has a bright future. He could be a good promo. He's decent in the ring, in great shape. There's too much with his music, and I know he's trying to promote his real life album. I understand that. I get it. Money, money, money. And WWE's got a vested interest because they're probably getting a cut of it. No, they are getting a cut of it. So I understand that. But I didn't need a full-on, like, you know, song from Elias. I mean, it was like a real song with his band. I get it. But I don't know. And then having Jeff Hardy hiding as one of, like, the drummers or the people helping with his equipment or whatever, basically in a complete dark, like, mask and jacket and all that, took the... Now, this is where it gets ridiculous. Last week, Elias hit Jeff Hardy in the back with a guitar. Jeff Jarrett style. And then Jeff Hardy comes out this week and exacts his revenge by trying to hit Elias with an electric guitar that looked real. It wasn't one of those propped ones, which is probably why he didn't make connection with Elias, because that would have, like, legitimately hurt him. But he hit his microphone as Elias kind of stepped away down the ramp. And the announcers called it a measure of retribution, a measure of revenge. How? The song was over. Yeah, Elias was going to do an encore. But he didn't destroy anything other than knock down a microphone with an electric guitar. How was that a measure of revenge? And then Jeff Hardy didn't chase him. He just stood there. How is that a measure of revenge? Is he in a feud with the microphone? Is the microphone stand and Jeff Hardy in a heated rivalry? Did I miss something? How is that a measure of revenge? And then Jeff Hardy standing there like he forgot how his legs work to go chase Elias. What? Oh, boy, I can't believe they tried to sell it to me as a measure of revenge. No, it actually makes you look like a fool because your plan was foiled. You didn't get what you wanted, and that was a piece of Elias. So you're the one who looks like a fool, not Elias. Elias got his song in. He's decent as a singer. And Jeff Hardy was the one made to look like an idiot, even though they tried to sell it the other way. No, he didn't get a measure of revenge, okay, Tom Phillips? He didn't. He got nothing. He took out a microphone stand. End of subject. Oh, good God. Okay, moving on. What else happened here? Yeah, we talked about Tucker and the Otis nonsense. Kofi Kingston and Sheamus. That was a good match. These two are grizzled vets. I mean, did you expect anything else other than a very good match? And that's exactly what it was. It was a Kofi Kingston win, very clean Kofi Kingston win with Trouble in Paradise. Somewhat short. I don't know what to make of this. Just kind of your ho-hum win for Kofi Kingston. And having New Day, man, all right, I've had too many rants this show. I don't want to go into another one. I will just calmly say, can we please, somebody, move on from the New Day gimmick? Or is WWE too scared to do anything with their cash cow? And New Day, let's be honest, they're a cash cow. They've got a ton of stuff that they've marketed. And I look, from a business perspective, money, because they're a for-profit company, and you're ultimately interested in making money, I get it. It's a scary thing to break up the New Day completely, because then their merchandise sales go, and they make a lot of money for WWE. So I get it. And that's what their gimmick is, and that's probably why they will never give up on this New Day hip swiveling, pancake throwing, bootio talking group that is, to me, well past its expiration date. It's like you left the cereal on the shelf and the expiration date is, some 6 years ago. That's awful. It's probably like, dry, maybe moldy. It's done. It's over. But there is clearly an audience somewhere out there for this group that finds them entertaining. I mean, it's why I don't know. I've never, ever found Kofi Kingston entertaining when he was WWE champion. Doing the hip swivel stuff and losing to Brock Lesnar after 6 months and then just going back to throwing pancakes like nothing happened. I mean, come on. It's the New Day gimmick to me was never, ever my cup of tea. Successful, monetarily successful, successful with their championship runs. Yeah, no question. I just never, ever, ever, ever connected with that group. Never. But I can't deny their success. And ultimately, that's what matters, not my opinion, right? Okay, moving on here. There's not too much left. Firefly Funhouse. Somebody asked me, what was that second symbol that he pulled out of his bin that Alexa Bliss? Well, she did make an appearance. That was pretty cool on the show in a very modified version of herself. That was really cool. I enjoyed Alexa Bliss on the show. She is adding something to the character that I think will continue to grow. It's just great stuff right now with Alexa Bliss. Can't say enough. So the second symbol that he pulled out, I honestly don't know. The only thing I think of, anybody remember Mordecai? He held like a cross or something. Now, if you don't know who Mordecai is, I don't even know if I will say do yourself a favor, because it's not really doing yourself a favor by looking up Mordecai. He was really kind of an Undertaker ripoff back in the early 2000s. But I don't think it's Mordecai. I don't know what that is, but he paused and looked at it and I couldn't tell. He brought out the mallet. We all know the mallet. And then that other symbol, maybe somebody else has an idea out there. If you have an idea, please let me know. I'd love to hear your theory, thoughts, or just something very obvious I'm missing. So, but yeah, he talked about a Ramblin' Rabbit said he had a wife. He's feeling all fuzzy. They went through a montage of Bray Wyatt destroying Ramblin' Rabbit with a mallet and the buzzard eating him and all this thing. And Ramblin' Rabbit, I do find kind of funny. I mean, Ramblin' Rabbit might be my favorite. Husky the pig is a play on Husky Harris, right? Huskus, rather. So I don't know. It was fine with the Firefly Funhouse. It's always just kind of lost in stupid entertainment there, and I have nothing to complain about. Braun Strowman and Keith Lee. And this is the final segment that I'll talk about. Okay, now, this again seems like a matchup that you would wait to do. This seems like a match you would build for. So I'm not understanding, again, why they went right to this. Is it the season premiere thing? Is it the season premiere that they're just salivating for to try to grow interest for? And yeah, they did it the week before with Braun Strowman and Keith Lee destroying each other and going through tables and all that kind of thing. But I don't know. It seems like a program that it's too early for me to really get invested in, because Braun Strowman is, he's a heel, but is he really? Because he got beat by Roman Reigns on SmackDown, and Roman Reigns is the ultimate heel, and that to me is such a good storyline with Jey Uso. I cannot say enough great stuff about Jey Uso and Roman Reigns. I alluded to that in my last show. But man, it's easily the best thing WWE has going right now. Even better than The Fiend and Alexa Bliss, which is in its own right very good. Roman Reigns and Jey Uso, the emotions that they're showing, the storytelling, Roman's emotions, he continues to mature as a heel. It's all damn brilliant, so I wanted to say that. But Braun Strowman gets beat down, so he has problems with his ribs, and Keith Lee takes advantage of that. And then Braun Strowman uses his head to hit Keith Lee in the southern region, and kicks Keith Lee in the face with just a big boot and gets the victory. So Keith Lee has now lost after a big boot. And yes, he got the low blow, so there's the caveat and the protection for Keith Lee and the excuse for Keith Lee as to why he lost. It wasn't clean. And then Keith Lee returns in kind with a kick to the groin. So it's kind of tit for tat. I get it. But I don't understand why Keith Lee had to lose here. I'm a fan of Keith Lee. I don't know why he would have lost really in a match that meant nothing other than just establishing superiority. I mean, it didn't really mean anything other than that. Why he had to lose here, I would have been actually fine with the DQ. Count out. Take your pick. I mean, I don't understand. It's interesting from this program. I'm not complaining about this program because it's interesting with two massive guys and they're both very capable. It just doesn't feel like there's a whole big backstory here. It's just like they're two big men. And who can outdo the other? That's it. And I feel like there needs to be more. There should be more. Oh, the other thing I didn't talk about that I should have is... Oh, a couple things. Jeez, how did I miss this? I don't talk about it quickly, so we'll wrap up the show in a minute here. But Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler, who attacked Asuka and Lana... I think they're going to do some big things with Shayna Baszler and Nia Jax. And, you know, could I see Nia Jax as women's champion? Yeah, I'm not a big fan of her as a character or as a person from everything I see and read. But that's just me. I might have seen things that maybe were taken out of context. But from what I know, not a big fan of either person, real or wrestling persona. But the whole Asuka versus Nia Jax program is clearly what they're building for. I think Shayna Baszler is actually taking a secondary seat here, which is weird. But that's clearly what they're headed towards. And Lana gets put through yet another table, by the way. So there's that. The AJ Styles that I wanted to talk about. AJ Styles versus Matt Riddle. Again. I think this is a matchup that you can put on any show, and you know it's going to be a really good match. I don't know why AJ Styles never talked about the elephant in the room, like literally the elephant in the room, and I don't mean that disrespectfully. This just absolute giant of a man with Jordan, and boy, oh boy, if I say his name wrong, people are going to just tear me up, but that's fine. It's Omo, oh boy, Amagbin. Amagbin. I'm just gonna say Amagbin. Jordan. How about that? Jordan. No. We'll go with that. It's much easier for me. So, I like this new dynamic with AJ Styles. He needed something new. We've been saying that. Other shows have been saying that. Wrestling fans, I think, in general, have been saying that. He needs something new. And while it's not a personality change he got or a ring entrance change or an attire change, he added a person. And I believe this is the man that, and I could be wrong, that was basically the bouncer for Raw Underground. And so now he is now the, I would assume, the personal security for AJ Styles. And AJ Styles gave zero explanation as to why or who he is. Outside of the announcers telling you who he was, AJ Styles didn't even acknowledge him beyond Jordan refusing to leave the ring when the referee asked him to for the match. But AJ Styles didn't talk about his connection, why he was there. And you know what? Like, fine. Okay. But I would like an explanation soon. I don't know. I mean, it's just, to me, when WWE does these things and they don't give you an explanation for multiple weeks, it tells me they don't even know why they did it. And they were trying to come up with something. I have no faith. See, I have no faith. WWE does something and then they don't explain it. So we will get an explanation, hopefully sooner than later, but I like it. I like this pairing a lot. The size difference is insane. This man is a mountain, and he doesn't speak. He's got a great look. I'm a big fan of this. Again, it's week one. This completely could get torn down and be a disaster, but I like it. I like it a lot. And so we'll have to see where this goes. Alrighty, well, I hope you guys enjoyed this. Again, by the way, I have Twitter at @wrestling_audio. That's @wrestling_audio on Twitter for those that want to follow me. We'll be tweeting throughout the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view for my thoughts on that. It's great to be back on Twitter with a pay-per-view in hand that I can actually rant or praise or whatever it may be. And so that's coming up this Sunday. Tomorrow is your wrestling nostalgia. Still looking at some topics here. I'm looking at the pool of things that you guys have submitted to me. So I'll be digging through that and choosing something for wrestling nostalgia tomorrow night. NXT comes to you. A special episode of NXT. It's not going to be your typical review show from Zach Smith, but he did submit a show to us to make sure that you guys get your audio fill from him on Thursday. So that'll be coming to you on Thursday, of course. And then Friday's Rivalries with Anthony DeMarco. And Saturday is your review for Hell in a Cell, and then Sunday's the pay-per-view itself. And then the Botch Guy will be joining us for a review on the backside of the pay-per-view, maybe Sunday, Monday, or Tuesday. Sunday night, on Monday or Tuesday. It all depends on him, his personal schedule, and what's good for him. We're still working out some details, but if you haven't subscribed to him, by the way, please, I don't know what you're doing. Go to YouTube and subscribe to the Botch Guy if you love wrestling and you love passionate wrestling fans. That is your guy. Trust me, you'll be glad that you did. So, all right, everybody. Well, I think that does it for me for this evening. It's late now where I'm at, so I'm going to sign off. But, of course, I'll be talking to you soon. Thanks for listening.